Well, hey, they're freaks. Matt and I just ripped Rabbit Hole Recap, and we got so ingrained into the conversation that I forgot to read the apps. The apps. Do you guys want any apps? Are you hungry out there? It is approaching lunch or dinner time some places. Lunchtime other places. This is a global podcast. So wherever you are, if you're hungry, this episode was brought to you by the Cash App. As you know, Cash App is the simplest way to send and save money, and now it's the simplest way to try to grow your money. We're stacking slivers of shares now, if you so please. You do not have to. The option is there. Cash App investing is there for you. Unlike investing tools that only let you buy entire shares of stock, Cash App lets you instantly invest as little or as much as you want when your favorite company stock. If you're looking to buy a sliver of a share instead of stacking some sats, if it's too expensive and you don't want to own a whole piece of a stock, you can buy as little as $1. And because Cash App is directly connected to your bank account, there are no 4 to 5 day waiting periods for inbound transfers, so you can start investing today. Brokerage services are provided by Cash App Investing, a subsidiary of Square, and member SIPC. As always, use the code STACKINGSATS when you sign up. You're going to get $10, and $10 is going to go to Owls Lacrosse, our good friends at Owls Lacrosse.
Wow, that was a poor hoot.
So download the Cash App today. Use the code STACKINGSATS from the App Store or Google Play Store today. This episode of Tales from the Crypt Rabbit Hole Recap is also brought to you by our good friends at Unchained Capital. They're there to do collaborative custody with you freaks. They're a financial services company built for Bitcoiners, all right? They have many things that they're building, and all revolves around multi-sig, all right? They have their Vault program. You can engage in a quorum with them. We'll use the 203 example right here. So if you want to engage in a 203 quorum, you can have two different hardware wallets, whether it be a Trezor or a Ledger, and you hold those keys. Unchained will hold the third key, and they will be there to sign if you ever need them. On top of this, they have their loan program. Friends don't let friends sell Bitcoin. All right, their financial products company built for Bitcoiners. They don't want you selling their Bitcoins. So if you're thinking about selling your Bitcoin, you just need some cash, you can engage in a Bitcoin collateralized U.S. dollar loan. You basically use Bitcoin as collateral, and Unchained Capital gives you cash that you then pay back in a loan form. On top of that, they're contributing to the open source nature of Bitcoin. Their multi-sig vault program, which I was explaining before, is all about revolve around the open source product Caravan, which is their desktop app that'll let you create these multi-sigs by yourself without Unchained. So if you don't want Unchained in the multi-sig, they've open sourced the software so you can do it yourself. On top of that, they're working on other projects like Hermit and Slip 39, and they've got good content as well. They've got Gradually Then Suddenly, Parker Lewis's great, incredible Red Pill blog. I almost got the pills mixed up.
Is that what he's calling it? Red Pill?
No. I'm saying it's a great Red Pill. I almost said Blue Pill.
It's every single blog post that he puts out is great.
Yeah. So good.
When I say, when Parker speaks, I mark it by.
Yes. Go to unchained-capital.com. Check out everything they got going on. Unchained-capital.com. I think you guys are going to like this rip. We went for like an hour and 10. So we'll show up as an hour and 14 about on your podcasting app. So don't get confused.
Well, because of the ad read.
Yeah, in the beginning. Ad read. Done. What is up, freaks? Welcome back to Tales from the Crypt. It's your boy Marty Bent here, sitting with Matt Odell for the first Rabbit Hole Recap of 2020.
Fuck yes. It's also like the first time we've... Not the first time. It's we haven't been in the same room for a couple episodes, so it's good to be back.
Yeah, it's good to have you face-to-face here. It's going to be a good one. Not a lot of news, but maybe we'll get a little retrospective here. It's 2020, year of clarity.
Year of clarity. Well, that's not going to age well as a comment. I don't know if this will be the year of clarity.
Not neither do I.
But I do get the pun. It is a good pun.
It is a good pun. Thinking of that, it's the year of clarity. It's 2020. The Bitcoin price right now, I believe it took a little dump. It's $6,954.87 for a block, 610,978. Getting closer to the halving. 610,978. We are 19,022 blocks away from the halving.
The halving 630, right?
Yes. 29,000.
Yeah, 29,000. Yeah. But it's 630. 630,000 is the halving.
Yeah, it's 19,000, excuse me.
What's the current block height?
610,978.
Yeah, it's 19,000.
19,022 blocks.
There we go. Well, now I think I'm glad we got that all settled. Yes. The halving is approaching. But that doesn't matter because it's already priced in, right, Marty?
I believe it is. It's priced in. We all know that. So just, yeah, this is the price. I don't know. This debate's exhausting.
It's a stupid debate. Bitcoiners aren't priced in.
They aren't. You tweeted that out at one point.
I think people attempt to price this shit in. They're just bad at pricing things in. That's why Ripple is worth what it's worth, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, Ripple's price should be zero if everyone priced in everything.
Yeah. Who knows? I don't know. It has a price. It's getting priced in every block. I'm not a big believer in the efficient market hypothesis either. I don't think everybody can know everything at once. I don't know if the market's as efficient as people think. Yeah, who knows?
Well, the EMH doesn't dictate that everyone knows.
Yes.
Just like that a threshold that, of the monetary capital.
It represents the
knows yes, enough to price yes, it in. Yes.
That's exactly
but what people happened. Are idiots, so I disagree.
Yeah. You know, it's not priced in. Like, the people that don't know who are on the sidelines who have capital to bring in, right? Like, that's why it's not priced in.
Yeah, I think what people miss is that, like, a lot of Bitcoin holders are just humble sat stackers. And, you know, we can't properly price in the halving because we're only putting in a responsible amount every week. And, you know, that amount, you know, will probably go up over time, but it'll either change or, you know, not go down. So I guess unless you lose your job or something like that, which would suck. But yeah, so if people are just putting in a certain amount of money every week and they're taking self-custody and then the supply decreases, then their impact on the available supply goes up after the halving. It's not like they're just going to drop in all the money they can possibly get their hands on, like, right now, just because they think the price will go up after.
Yeah, there have been people who have been buying, like, $100 a paycheck since 2014.
Exactly. I think that's what a lot of people miss. And I think, especially with Bitcoin, it's, like, very much still, a retail-driven market.
Yeah. And think about the retail minds, again, that aren't educated. And when they do become educated, become sat stackers. And start buying $100 a paycheck too. That's money on the sidelines that right. is not priced in.
Yeah, you have adoption, future adoption, not priced in.
Yeah, yeah. We'll see. Well, it dictates that this gets adopted more. Will it get adopted more? Let's talk about the first 11 years.
Bullish on adoption.
Oh shit! It's the second. We're a day away from Bitcoin's 11th birthday.
Yes, we are.
Fuck! I didn't even realize that before we hit record.
Yeah, a year ago plus a day, we were absolutely wrecked having a fantastic podcast yes. for its 10th birthday.
Yeah, we're actually trying to make that happen again with the iterative guys. We got to find a spot to
yeah
do a
we
live
should
podcast.
Definitely that was a lot of fun.
Leo, if you're listening, I'm working on that. Yeah, shit, what does this next decade have entail? Is Bitcoin made the strides it needs to make in its first decade plus one?
Dude, I don't even like making 1 year predictions. Fucking 10 year predictions can go fuck themselves.
Yeah, no, I try to stay out of the prediction in retrospect game too much. I did one piece last week, and it was because somebody, Grubles, I believe, surfaced a video that just made me very nostalgic. A video of somebody in February 2011, right before Satoshi left, showing people how they could use Bitcoin to buy Domino's gift cards and buy pizza. And
pizza with air quotes. Yeah. Domino's isn't pizza.
Yeah. Debatable. Not priced in. Whatever. But no, that made me nostalgic. And it's crazy to think of how far we've come since that moment. Like, in that moment in particular, Bitcoin was trading at 96 cents, I believe. He spent 19 Bitcoin on a.
Imagine that.
On a pizza.
Do you think you could ever eat Domino's again after that?
I don't know. Laszlo's talked about this. He doesn't regret it.
What was his? Was his Pizza Hut?
No, his was Papa John's.
Papa John's.
Yeah, you get that Papa John's.
It would just kill football for me. Like, every time I watched football and just a Papa John's ad came out, and be like, because he paid 10,000 Bitcoin.
That sweaty fucker made me burn some sats.
For some reason, 19 feels worse. Because, like, Laszlo, you know, he did well for himself. You know, that was, you know, a key aspect of Bitcoin's history. This poor dude who spent 19 Bitcoin and no one knows who he is or anything.
Well, no, it was the creator. This was a prototype that he was showing. And that's the other crazy thing. So it was a prototype in February 24th, 2011, I believe the date that it was recorded and posted. the service was called Coin Card, and they did two things. They let you use Bitcoin to buy gift cards, and then for like 2 months, I looked up the wiki page. They were allowing people to sell their mined Bitcoin and cash out via PayPal. So it was like one of the first exchanges as well. Like PayPal shut them down like 2 months.
Okay, so that guy probably did pretty well for himself too.
Yeah, exactly. Coin Card. I don't know if they're still around. There is a Coin Card around. I'm not sure if it's the same service.
I mean, it's a pretty obvious name, right?
Yeah. Yeah, very obvious name.
Maybe you got the trademark for it. That could be valuable.
Yeah, so maybe
fuck IP, but you know, squatter's gonna squat.
Maybe that 19 Bitcoin for the prototype demo wasn't such a bad investment. Get people pique their interest, get them in.
So what was your prediction on that?
I didn't have a prediction. I was just saying, a little retrospective. It was like, it's crazy that how far we've gotten from this video to like the fact that we can do the dime bag. And I could just point a QR code and pay instantly, like on a second layer. It's pretty crazy.
I mean, that's what's crazy to me is, you know, people get impatient with Bitcoin, but this shit moves really fucking fast. You know, I just watching just the progress we made in the last year is crazy.
No, it's insane. And that's what I was talking about in today's Ben. All right, let's just jump into it. Like, people are worried about fee market and stuff like that, but if you really take a step back and look at what's going on, I believe we're still living in the great build out phase. Like, so the first 11 years have been a great build out. Like, we were basically people wandering with blindfolds on, holding our arms out, trying to just feel the boundaries of the system and how it works. And it took lessons like Satoshi's Dice and other things to help us realize that block space is precious and something that you should probably be very efficient with. And then you have things like Segwit come along, and then Lightning get built and stuff like that. Like, it's just, we're still in the great build out phase.
HD wallets versus, you know, reusing addresses by default.
Yeah, PSBT being a standard now, like, it's going to enable a bunch of other stuff. I'm never going to pronounce that wrong again. We'll get to that later in the podcast. Why?
Partially signed Bitcoin transaction.
But it's just like people like are always screaming about mass adoption, like Bitcoin isn't ready. It's like, no shit, it's not ready. Like, we're still building this out. And if you take a step back and look at what is being built, in my opinion, so people, again, bringing it back to the fee market, people are worried that Bitcoin is going to be able to sustain itself after the block subsidy, which is the reward program into the protocol that is, or excuse me, part of the reward that's programmed is a protocol that's giving to miners. They get the subsidy plus the fees. Right now, the subsidy is 12.5 Bitcoin, as we alluded to in my bad math segment a few minutes ago. We're getting closer to the next halving, which will reduce that to 6.25 Bitcoin plus the fee. I'm just thinking of this particular subject as one in like recent days and trying to think of analogy. And I think one analogy that I like to use and have been using more recently is the block subsidy right now is like a booster rocket, and it's basically helping us bootstrap a network effect and getting us to a certain point. And the crazy thing about this booster rocket is that we're building the space shuttle that it will eventually send into escape velocity out into the wanders of space. But we sort of have this fuel as we're building this system. The onus is on us to actually build the system and make it useful so people actually value the token Bitcoin. And I think that's happening.
Yeah, we're bootstrapping this motherfucker.
Yeah.
I love that analogy, except for the space shuttle. It should be sending up
a citadel? A space citadel?
Some kind of capsule or something. Because the space shuttle was a failed program, you know.
Get
rid of it.
No, there have been space shuttle failures in the past.
Right, but they got rid of it. It was like the whole idea was that, you know, you have this reusable plane-like shuttle that could land again. Yeah. And now they're doing like what SpaceX is doing.
Yes, where yes.
It land, like the rocket lands back.
Yes, but and yes.
Like space shuttle had like a ton of cost overruns, like horrible budget. I'm not trying to dismiss your analogy. I love your analogy.
No.
It's a good analogy.
It's good to steel man the analogy.
It's good.
If you assume that the space shuttle was a pristine idea, I guess.
No, yeah. I mean, I think it's pretty amazing all the progress that has been made so far. And I think, like, if you're watching, it's extremely difficult to not be super excited about Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And we clearly are, you know. We've devoted a significant chunk of our lives to this shit, so.
We have, and apparently there are others doing that as well. We got a shout-out. Had two shout-outs today. We can't read the first one. First one was a shameless ad. Not a shameless ad. I'm not going to say that, but what we could deem an ad that we don't feel comfortable reading.
Yeah, he was pretty humble about the ad read.
Yes.
But it was very... We don't want to do ads on the shout-outs.
Yeah.
Like, no links out to a service.
Yes, yes. We're not.
So if you were the one who did the shout-out, reach out to us. We'll happily send you your sats back. We appreciate the support regardless, and the site does look pretty cool. We appreciate you know, trying to inform people on how to use Bitcoin with best practices in mind.
Yes. And we do have a shout-out that is palatable today. Shout-out to Adam Gall, who has done so much to bring together the real crypto people in Cleveland, Ohio. You're a decent guy, Adam. Don't let the bullshit blockchainers get you down. Adam, never, ever let the bullshit blockchainers get you down. Keep your head high. Look them in the eyes and tell them they're stupid, bullshitting blockchainers.
I mean, these last 2 years have helped with that.
Yeah. And Adam, we just need real Bitcoin people in Cleveland, Ohio, too. I don't know what a real crypto person is. What does that look like these days?
Did he say real crypto?
Yeah.
Crypto's the C word. The C word's dirty.
And
dirty
let's be
word.
Clear, this is not Adam saying this. This is the person who purchased
this. Adam's buddy.
Shout out to Adam. Shout out to Adam's buddy.
Both must be freaks. We appreciate you freaks.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Cleveland had Bitcoin Boulevard. They were way ahead of the game.
What was Bitcoin Boulevard?
It was a bunch of shops in 2014, I think, or 2015, that started accepting Bitcoin. And then the city of Cleveland or Ohio passed a law that said you couldn't accept Bitcoin for alcohol. So, like, one of the biggest stores was a wine store. They just, like, knocked the wind out of the sails pretty hard. They started selling, like, merch in the wine store. They're like, you could buy merch with the Bitcoin. But there was a bunch of stores. I don't know. I thought it was cool. I think a lot of them were using BitPay, which is what I've said a lot, is that I think one of the biggest things that has happened this year has been the rise of BTC Pay, and I think one of the biggest things that will happen over this next year is the continued rise of BTC Pay. You know, for the first time, merchants are able to easily accept Bitcoin without a third party. They have that full stack there, so I think that's going to be a game changer. And I think that while 2014, 2015 were the years where everyone was trying to push this merchant adoption narrative, what they were really pushing was these fiat conversion centralized payment processors like BitPay, which really doesn't do anything to help the circular Bitcoin economy. I mean, it kind of does if you only earn Bitcoin and you need a place to spend it, but you're really just selling Bitcoin through an abstraction. With proper BTC Pay integration, merchants will be able to try and get KYC-free Bitcoin, basically stack sats as privately as they can, by accepting Bitcoin through BTC Pay without a third party. And I think they'll offer discounts for that purpose. And I know myself as a Bitcoiner, I'd be way more likely to spend my Bitcoin if I thought the merchant was ideologically motivated as well and had an intention. They were stacking sats. They were like trying to hodl their Bitcoin. Like if I see a BTC Pay server, that's basically them alluding to that to me, right?
No, I agree. And it goes back to what I was mentioning earlier with the rocket boosters, or the booster rockets, excuse me. Like merchant and not even the booster rockets. It has having to do with like the great build out. Like merchant adoption the first time around wasn't a good meme, again, because you had to use centralized services like BitPay, and there wasn't good decentralized invoicing software, not decentralized, open sourced invoicing software like BTC Pay. Like now it is more possible. Like the utility is there with the open source tools, and hopefully it drives value for people. I know that for us it has driven value. Like I actually get a lot of peace of mind knowing that our invoices are going straight to something I control. I mean,
Yeah, we don't have to trust Patreon or something.
Yes, it comes with peace of mind. And also, to be honest, comes with stress. You do have to take care of that and have procedures and practices and
personal responsibility.
Yeah, but
the world needs more of it.
It does feel powerful. It does feel very empowering knowing that.
I mean, to add to your analogy, maybe, you know, merchant adoption is more like something like a space station or something. Like, you got to get to space before you start.
Exactly.
Start fucking around with space stations. There's no reason for the space station if you didn't get up there yet.
Yeah, well, you have to have the ability to, again, use the tool in the way that you want to, too. Like, we found with Satoshi Dice and the manias that happen as the price goes up, that the blockchain gets cluttered. It gets pretty busy, and then, therefore, it gets more expensive, so... When that happens, it's not really useful as a medium of exchange. Like, we need these layers to provide that utility at all times.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're going to be talking about fees not rising for a bit, and then all of a sudden fees are going to explode.
Yeah.
So just be prepared.
Well, that's the other thing I mentioned, too. Like, it is crazy. Well, like, fees. So fees last month, December 2019, fees as a percentage of the block subsidy, the block reward, the block subsidy, plus the fees were 1.1% of the whole reward. At the height in 2017, the percentage of the block reward that was the fee was 30.4%. So that's a big decline, but you also have to take into consideration at that point, SegWit had just been implemented and was not widely adopted. I believe SegWit adoption grew by like 56% this year.
Lightning didn't exist. As Mr. Hoddle said, there was a bunch of fuckery going on.
People weren't batching correctly, using best practices. So since December 2017, in that 2 year period, we've had all these efficiency gains let's be honest, there probably aren't as many people using it as there was in December 2017.
But there's not as many people spending Bitcoin.
Yes.
Hodling is using.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. There's not as many retail investors like moving.
Right.
Moving coins around and trading.
Right.
And then even still moving forward with things like BIP Taproot, like things are only going to get more efficient. So, if things all else equal, fees could stay at one sat for a while.
I wouldn't count on it.
Until
I think this time next year fees will be significantly higher.
Yeah, again, I said all else equal. If all else were not equal and more demand came, they would rise. But all else being equal, we are making it so fees fall.
There's a little bit of a vicious cycle, right? The other thing is the wallets have gotten better at estimating fees.
Yes,
because they were overestimating. So basically we were getting in a situation where we can never get back to the baseline, where people just kept, they didn't want to wait, so they just overestimated. Both the wallet overestimated, and then the individuals using Bitcoin were just picking the highest fee to just try and get it confirmed as soon as possible.
Yeah.
But I think Lightning is going to be a huge one, because if I'm going to send Bitcoin, I much prefer to use Lightning anyway. I think the UX is better, and that UX is brand new. You know, it's getting iterated and improved every day. I already think the UX is better. So if you're locked in on some low fee channels, that's going to be a major difference. But look, right now we're sitting at 1 sat per byte, pretty much on the reg. Fees literally can't go lower than that. So. I think it's a pretty safe prediction to say that they're going to go up from here.
No, I agree. Again, Jevons paradox comes into play. The utility of Lightning Network, a lot of people like to shit on it, but it's there. And I tweeted this out a few days ago, from experience. I'm a Bitcoiner. Obviously, I'm biased. I don't want to say a small blocker, but I think we should withhold, or we should prevent ourselves from raising the block size at all costs and try all other options until all other options are exhausted. That's when maybe you would raise the block size. So I think Lightning is I'm bullish on Lightning just from a philosophical perspective. I think that's the way to go. With that all being said, from a user perspective, I have not had a problem sending or receiving a Lightning transaction since we set up our BTC Pay our node with running BTC Pay server hooked up via Zap. I've been using that since May and haven't really had one problem.
With the one caveat that the hardest UX issue right now for Lightning is getting inbound liquidity. And because of you freaks being so fucking awesome, we don't have a liquidity issue whatsoever.
Yes.
Both of our nodes are very well connected.
Well, no, it also...
It's true. Yes, the freaks... It's true. It is a caveat.
We are well connected, but yes, it's
like
not...
swaps will help. Swaps will be the big thing, but we don't have the UX there for the swaps yet.
But I think... But even like the freaks... Yes, the freaks providing liquidity is incredible, and it definitely happens, but... I put some effort into setting up the channels too. I reached out to Pierre.
Right.
I reached out to like other big nodes. I was like, hey.
Yeah, but like your buddy Pierre, right? Like he's like a good friend of ours.
Yes, but this
you know?
Yeah,
he created. He runs, you know, what the third largest Lightning node on the network. I'm just saying, it's just a caveat. I'm super bullish.
But
on
he does
it
that
well.
For everybody. He doesn't do it for me because I was a friend. Like
right.
It's a service he provided. Like I went to his service. I set that.
Oh,
up.
You paid the fee
yes.
on the service.
Yeah. I did that, like, and if you do put the work in to set up your channels, right? Like, again, I haven't had that much of a problem.
Well, for other node, we didn't have to pay for the inbound PR liquidity.
Well, that would have been good to know. Yeah, we do have the
thief. He offers a good price for it. The inbound liquidity is, like, I think is a relatively competitive price. It's a good price.
It was worth it. It was worth it to get liquidity. And, again, haven't had problems. The biggest problem we had was today and yesterday. We had, like, figure out our certification because, like, because of the new year.
Personal responsibility.
Yeah.
No, but I think, like, look, going forward, the UX there is going to be swaps. That's the whole idea, right? You open a channel, and then, you know, after you open the channel, you swap out to yourself, and then you have inbound liquidity. You don't have to worry about, you know, paying someone for inbound liquidity. I think that's going to be a huge UX, you know, boost. I think that's, like, one of the main caveats that Lightning has right now, and I think it'll get improved this year significantly. I mean, I look back. I don't think either of us were running Lightning nodes this time last year. I know I wasn't.
I don't think I was either. I had a Casa. I had my Casa node running, I believe.
The Casa didn't release yet, right?
No, because I think I got it for Christmas. I believe I set it up like around. I don't know. I'd have to check Twitter.
My first one was. I thought your first one was the Power Launcher. Was it not? Was not Pierre's Lightning node launcher?
Yeah, I definitely set that up too. I'm trying.
That was my first one, and it was in January. So it was like, we're almost about to hit the year mark.
I think I set up Casa first and then Pierre's for when I wanted to like get more.
But anyway, that's
depth.
Crazy, right?
Yeah.
That was only a year. Like so much shit has gone down. It is absolutely mind bending when you start to think about like the progress that was made over this last year in a year that has been pretty much been dominated by like a bearish price trend.
Yeah. I mean, TFTC.io released a dime bag, the hottest app on the Lightning Network.
The hottest app on the Lightning Network.
That got dropped in May. No, I'm kidding. We have video games embedding Lightning Network functionalities into them. We're building WhatsApp. I'm seeing Jorg is iterating on that. I believe he dropped something like an official pull request for one of the implementations. For WhatsApp, like for a messaging system within a Lightning Network.
Have you seen this new Sphinx app? Have you played around with it at all yet?
No.
I get you an invite. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to talk about it yet. It's a closet chill. Keto's been working with them from Noddle.
It sounds familiar.
I've definitely heard
some rumblings about it.
Yeah, you send encrypted messages back and forth, and you can easily send Lightning payments. And I guess technically every message is a Lightning payment, but it doesn't route over the Lightning Network.
Interesting. Yeah. What's a route over Tor?
Yeah, it's just a P2P encrypted chat app.
Interesting.
Open source.
Have you played with it?
Yeah, I have the demo app.
Yeah. Well,
I'll get you an invite.
Thanks
for
that
tease. This is what Rob was talking about. Rob was talking about it in our group chat.
Now you're doxing group chats?
I mean, you know, Rod's a great dude. Rod's a great dude.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah.
But we'll talk about it later. Shills will be incoming. It looks interesting. It looks interesting to me. My point is, like, I'm not sure if the where I was going with that is I love WhatsApp. It's really cool. I hope to see it get iterated on, and I'm curious to see how it works.
I don't even think it's an app. I think it's just a prototype for a messaging protocol that
right.
apps can be built
I'm just
on.
Not sure. I'm not sure if we need, you know, messages to go on channels, you know, to actually send. Like, if I had like a nice open source encrypted chat app that also let me seamlessly send Lightning payments between users, like each user's phone app was also a, you know, a Lightning node, but a light client Lightning node, that might be enough for me. I don't know if I need to actually run over the Lightning protocol.
Yeah, it might be.
That's where I was going with that, yeah. Basically.
Yeah, where I'm going with, like, these ideas are getting fleshed out.
Yeah, exactly. We're just booster rockets. We're just booster rocketing. Yeah.
And the how long do you think we have, though? This conversation is just revolving around the fee subsidy.
We haven't even done an ad read yet.
I'm just going to record them and throw them in the beginning.
We're going to throw them in the beginning?
Yeah.
We're not going to just, like, semi-mid-roll them?
No.
I appreciate that.
At this point, no.
I think the freaks appreciate that.
Yeah.
We don't like mid-rolls here at TFTC. We think they're...
they are more valuable.
They're just... As a listener, I do not appreciate them, so...
Sorry.
I think we should have a hard line on that. I don't even know where we were now.
That was our Thursday business meeting.
Oh, I want to do it. Yeah, I want to do a shout out to Matt Case because we're finally drinking the bourbon he sent us. Well, Matt is, Marty isn't, but he will drink it at a future date. So thank you, Matt.
I am abstaining.
We appreciate you.
I'm gonna go get a haircut later this afternoon. I want to be all boozed up.
That's fair. That's fair. I was feeling bullish. Whenever I feel bullish, I always have a glass of whiskey.
Why are you feeling bullish?
I'm just bullish on Bitcoiners. You know, new year, I don't know. I get excited.
Yeah.
I get excited very easily. I mean, do you remember how bullish I was on January 3rd last year?
Yeah, yeah. You made, you didn't make everybody market buy.
No, not yet. I wasn't that bullish.
We talked about it last week, though. That's another thing to mention about the Lightning Network. It's getting adopted by big players like Bitfinex.
Right. I said that exchanges were never going to, but that wasn't really my bullish aspect. That was like me trying to tamp down my bullishness. But yeah, I wasn't bullish on Lightning this time last year, which is pretty crazy. I was like kind of a Lightning skeptic bear. I thought Bitcoin would be fine without Lightning anyway, but I wasn't really actually that bullish on it. I didn't think exchanges were going to do it. Now we have Bitfinex doing it. Now we have all these smaller new companies doing it, like Escher and SparkSwap and Zaps Olympus coming out. It's pretty crazy how far. No, but what I said that when I was really bullish, remember, I was like, when you tuck your kids in at night, just think to yourself, do I have enough Bitcoin? Which is like such a fucking ridiculous thing to say.
But it's always,
I believe it. I believe it.
You do. I believe that you go to bed and you're like, oh, God damn.
I don't have kids
sats?
Yet. But if I did, that's what I'd be thinking about.
Do they have enough sats? Are we just going to... Let's just reminisce here for a bit. We're like a half hour in already. We haven't even got to one topic. It's pretty slow news week.
Yep. It's been a good... yeah. I agree.
Yeah.
Well, now that we brought it up, let's jump into the news, and then we'll come back and we'll reminisce a little bit to finish her up.
I like that. All right. First thing we want to talk about is came onto my radar yesterday. I saw Alex Leishman quote tweeted it. Shout out to Alex. We'll actually have an episode dropping with him tomorrow. Make sure you check that out. That's a banger. Alex is a great dude, founder of River Financial. But he highlighted this service, which I believe was created by Stores Provost. Did I say his name?
I don't know how to pronounce things.
I think it's Stores Provost.
It's a good try.
Sorry if I'm pronouncing it wrong. He's been around for a while, works at blockchain, making some cool apps. This nthkey, nthkey.com for iOS users. It is a device that basically lets you create like or sign a PSBT transaction. That's why I will never nthkey actually isn't the reason why I will never say PSBT wrong again. I did my first PSBT transaction over the weekend by myself without anybody handholding me.
Proud of you.
And it was a cool experience. But nthkey is
you
letting
did one you... at Citadel too, right?
Yeah, I did that testnet. I did a mainnet one.
It feels better on mainnet, right?
Yeah, yeah, it does.
That's what I said. That's why I feel like testnet doesn't really, I don't know.
Yeah, it just, yeah.
It doesn't really get you there.
Yeah, you need the deep breaths and the anxiety.
Yeah, you need to feel, you need to have real money on the line.
Yeah. But Nth Key is, again, it's a service that's going to let you sign PSBT transactions from your phone and check transactions before you sign. I downloaded it. Be careful if you do download it. It will have access to your files.
Yeah, be careful of any app you download, and just assume like anything you have in your phone is fucking compromised.
Yeah, so use an old phone. And so the idea would be that you put a pre-signed Bitcoin transaction file on the phone or somewhere.
Well, I mean, the key idea here is that it allows you to use your iPhone as one of the keys of your multisig.
Yes.
Right? So you could have like a multisig setup where you have a cold card, an iPhone, an Electrum. Right, and those are three different trust models, and two of them have to be broken. You go to three of five, you can get even more crazy with it. But yeah, like as Marty said, like it probably makes more sense to use on an iPhone that is purely just your multi-sig iPhone, like not your actual like day-to-day device, especially from a privacy standpoint. You know, really that caveat should go with pretty much like every Bitcoin app. You're better off using it on a device that is separate from your main device.
Yeah, but
does he really work at Blockchain?
I know he did. I don't know if he still does. Okay. Or he might be the dev that they support.
Yeah, I think that's what it is, right?
Yeah,
they're giving him grants to support his development work.
Yeah, yeah. And don't let the caution over privacy. Belittle the app. It's a really cool app, and it's an example of something that I think that the new, what is it, BIP 174, is that the PSBT standard?
Or is it 74?
I forget.
Fuck. I do not know my BIPs,
whatever,
man.
Like the PSBT has been standardized, and now it's you're seeing a flurry of apps built around this standardization now, and that's actually
fantastic to see. We need
that's what Alex said in his tweet. Like that's what Alex said in his tweet. 2020 is going to be a year where we see like an explosion of cool use cases coming out of PSBT standardization.
Does River have something in mind, or he didn't? I saw River like
They're definitely experimenting with.
Well, first of all, River Financial is this new. I mean, you're going to have a whole podcast on it. Really cool new Bitcoin brokerage service where you can buy and sell Bitcoin. Basically, like what Coinbase should have been. And they just have a pure Bitcoin focus. Then out of the gate, they have Lightning withdrawals and Lightning deposits. A lot of cool things. A lot of cool features they have over there. So they have a recurring buys, which is, you know, a big one.
Discounted too, if you set up recurring
buys. I like that. I like that as an incentive that they discount your fees if you set up a recurring buy.
Yeah. No. I think the team they've amassed is impressive, and I met Alex for the first time in Riga a couple years ago, or last year.
I still haven't met him.
Really enjoyed.
I was upset I missed that podcast. I'm excited to listen to it.
I thought you were going to join us. That's why I thought you were going to be in town last week.
Yeah.
Like when we were supposed to do the recap last week,
family's important, man.
I set the studio up.
Yeah, like, and I was like, dude, we're recording remote. Like 3 minutes before, I was like, we're recording remote, bro. The other thing about River is that it's available in 49 states, only U.S., 49 states. It's not available in me and Marty's state of New York.
Yeah, we can't use it.
Thanks to our favorite Ripple board member, Ben Lawski, who passed the bit license and then went through the revolving door. And now, after pretending that he was protecting unwitting investors, joined the board of one of the most malicious companies in the space. So cheers to you, Ben Lawski. This one goes out.
Yeah, I hope you're having a happy new year, Ben.
Definitely doesn't listen to the podcast. Okay. We might have to discontinue the podcast.
Hey, if you don't listen to the podcast, 2020 is not going to be a year of clarity for you, okay? That is, 2020 is going to be a year of clarity for you freaks.
If it was up to Ben Lawski, every podcaster would need to have like a $500,000 bit license and do KYC on their listeners.
Right? Fuck you, Ben. Fuck you, Ben. All right, on to more pleasant topics. You got your noddle. I saw that you plugged it in.
Number one, baby. Number one.
You got that thing was inked up. You got a lot of autographs on that thing.
Yeah,
bro.
I got all the NIM signatures on it. So, but yeah, that's dope. They all signed it. Both the Samurai team and the Noddle team. I have a lot of respect for both those teams. Great teams. I've been looking forward to this for a fucking minute.
Teams.
I full disclosure. Paid for this completely out of pocket. It is an expensive device. There are ways to obviously have a cheaper node. This is a pre-built node in a box that works out of the box with Samurai. All you have to do is when you open your Samurai wallet, you just scan the QR code and it's connected to your full node. Fantastic UX in that regard. Samurai soon should be releasing their mobile mixing within the app. So mixing will be as simple as just scanning the QR code from your node that's displayed on your node, and then pressing the mix button on your Android device, which is fucking awesome. With that same caveat that we had before, where the ideal situation here, especially if you have a large amount of Bitcoin going through it, is to use a dedicated Android device that only is used for Samurai. Now, why is this node cost so much? I think, are they charging $750 for it?
I thought it was $800 off the top of my head.
But maybe the early release was $750. That is expensive, especially when you can run something like MyNode. I've heard a lot of good things about MyNode, where you can get an SSD, you get a Raspberry Pi 4, you install MyNode on it, it costs like $200. So what are you paying for? You're paying for the build quality is fucking fantastic. It's got that sexy red case, it's got the LEDs on it. But even cooler, and I hope this becomes the standard for these pre-built nodes, is that it's got... Not only does it have SSDs, which I don't know why anyone would use a hard drive anymore with their node, because the performance benefit you get from SSDs is fucking huge. It has redundant SSDs that are encrypted. None of these nodes default to encrypted drives. So if someone gets a hold of your node, they can just bypass your passwords and just pull your keys right off of the device. Now, does that matter for Dojo? Not that much, only for privacy, because you're not actually storing funds on the Dojo. But when it comes to running a Lightning node, if you're running like a Lightning routing node, your funds are stored on the device. So you want that device to be encrypted. Now, the encryption is at rest when the power's off. So what happens if someone decides, while it's still plugged in, to open the case and take your keys? Well, Ketominer thought of that, and the Noddle has a built-in kill switch. So not only are the drives encrypted, not only are they redundant, so they back each other up if something happens, you know, if you have your Lightning node fail, they back each other up, but it has this kill switch, so if someone comes in to wherever you're running your node, takes the node, unplugs it, tries to open the case, or doesn't even unplug it, just opens the case, the whole thing just powers down and is encrypted, and then they need that encryption password to get it. So that's just well thought out, just really good build quality, turnkey, you turn it on, you plug it in, you know, you have your full dashboard where you get to decide what you're running. If you're running BTC Pay, if you're running your Electrum server, if you're running Lightning, you get to choose. Whole thing can run through Tor, which is, you know, is how you should do it, so you're not exposing your IP. Just a really great, seamless product. We're going to have videos. Videos will come out soon. I really want Samurai to release the mobile mixing, because I think... like, why make the video without the mobile mixing and then just have them a week later just release the mobile mixing? So that's kind of what I'm waiting for. And then the videos will start coming streaming through. And as usual, you will continue to hear my thoughts and evolution on that process.
You give a really compelling case.
It's fucking cool,
to buy that,
man.
Case.
It's fucking cool. I think all of these nodes in the box, they should definitely at least be encrypted. Like, even if you don't put the kill switch there, they should be encrypted at rest. And yeah, Ketominer's paranoid, so you could be less paranoid. He does the paranoia for you, and you pay him for that privilege, and I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's shout out to that team. To the teams, excuse me, plural.
To the teams.
The Noddle and Samurai teams, putting the teams on their back.
I also, on like a completely separate note, discovered that the Samurai Whirlpool fees are way less than I thought they were to begin with.
Really?
Because I, up until this point, I thought the fee was based on how much money you sent into Whirlpool, but it's not. It's based off of what pool size you use. So if you send in one Bitcoin or a half a Bitcoin into the let's just say the 0.01 Bitcoin pool, the 1 million sat pool, it's the same fee regardless. It's always 5% of 1 million sats, just one time fee, and then you're remixing after that. So it's in my mind, it's unfairly cheap, and people shouldn't be worried about that fee in terms of the privacy gain you are actually getting from it. So
Yeah.
Well, seems fantastic.
It's fun to see this in the wild. We've been talking about it for so long. I mean, we got a tease to Bitcoin 2019 when we sat down with...
Yeah. Which was itself like 2 months after we got the original Noddle, which is a fantastic piece of hardware, which our thief, our friendly thief, fan of the pod who's running our Bitcoin node, he's been running a high-powered routing node off of that Noddle hardware for a year with no issues, which is just fucking impressive. I mean, that device was, I think, a $400 device. It just goes to show like the build quality that's there. It's a high-performance node, man. It's got 24/7 uptime and all running through Tor.
That's like, so that's my biggest worry. Like, do you think it'll get to a point where like we'll be having these dedicated nodes like in a box at home, people will be comfortable running them, like running businesses from their node in a box?
I think so. I think that's, it makes the most sense to me in terms of like a UX versus security trade-off versus privacy trade-off, that like trilemma that just exists there. Because like you want the UX to be good, but you want it to be easy to use, but you don't want to sacrifice security and privacy for it. And I think the best way to do that is probably having an always-on node at home. Whether that's, I'm like really bullish. I actually haven't used my node yet, but a lot of people that I respect have been using it and been testing it out. I've been talking about it, and the project from afar looks very interesting to me. And basically with my node, you can run one of these nodes in the box. You buy all the parts separately. And as I said earlier, you can run it for like $200, $250, all through Tor. They just added Whirlpool to it. I think they're about to add Dojo to it. So in that situation, you know, one person, and as I said earlier, but the way the pairing works with the Dojo is such a breath of fresh air, because for the longest time, you know, running an Electrum server is difficult, and especially if you're running it through Tor, getting other people, like if you want to provide access to your Electrum node to other people, while a privacy trade-off there where they have to trust you to not be logging their transactions, it's better than doing it with a chain analysis server. That process is a very convoluted, difficult process to have people connect to it. But with something like the Dojo, and it's just a QR code scan, like your friends and family can then connect to yours. And the person running the Dojo can't steal your money. They can just compromise your privacy. So I think that's a key step in that direction. And it's, so we don't, when I say I'm bullish on home nodes, I don't necessarily mean that I'm bullish on everyone running a home node. I just think like Uncle Jim, who cares, will be running the node, and you know, he'll have 20, 25 people all connecting back to it as their back end. Right.
Shout out to all the Uncle Jims out there.
Thanks, Jim.
Yeah. Here. One of my favorite uncles, Uncle Jim.
I wish I just had an Uncle Jim so I could just connect to his node and just have him deal with all my Bitcoin shit for me.
I actually don't have an Uncle Jim, but do I? No, I don't. I don't think so.
The key to all my placeholder names is, you know, I don't have any relatives by that name. That's why I use them. It's like, yeah, reverse doxing.
Yeah, it's a good way to throw people off the trail. Fake family members. Everyone's
searching. There's like a Jim O'Dell somewhere.
Yeah, he's out there. Jim O'Dell? wasn't he state champ back in the day? Wasn't he on that 92 state champ team in New York? Yeah. Well, yeah, it seems like, again, like I'm very bullish. It feels like the 2010s were like the warm up for Bitcoin. Like the tools which you can use to leverage Bitcoin, the network right now, have never been better. They've never been more robust. And like we've been saying, it feels like they're only iterating and getting better at a faster and faster pace. Like people are already talking about like how BIP Taproot's going to get implemented. And some people are like bullish on like early second half of 2020.
No way. It's not happening in 2020. Shit is going to take way longer than you think it's going to take.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, that's a good thing. It's a good thing. You don't want Bitcoin changing too quickly. Then attack vectors come in, you know. We don't want any, no shotgun emergency hard forks on New Year's, you know.
No, you don't want that. You don't want that. Take your time. It's something worth taking your time for. This is these are very, very critical systems, and they should be handled with care. And
there's no going back if we fuck it up.
Exactly. Speaking of which, if you fuck up your private key storage, you're going to have a bad time in the future. Jameson Lopp, Bitcoiner, CTO Casa, has put together a guide for all the metal Bitcoin storage devices out there. Your Bill Foddles, Crypto Steals. Let me pull up the list here.
There's a shit ton of them. There's like 40. He's been reviewing them for a while, putting them through their paces and like absolutely destroying them in fire and shit. But now you put it in like a nice table form on a single site.
Right? Yeah. BitKey, BlockPlate, ColdBit Steel, Crypto Key Stack, Crypto Keys, Crypto Tag, Hodl Knox.
I really like that Crypto Steel Capsule. How do they rate it?
Crypto Steel Capsule got an A- for overall grade. The heat grade is A. The corrosion grade is an A. The crush grade is a B. Crypto Steel Cassette, which is the original Crypto Steel, B for overall grade, B for heat grade, A for corrosion grade, and D for crush grade.
Wow, you rated like 10 different wallets, 10 different seed storage devices higher than.
Oh, there's a lot. Yeah.
Than crypto. Yes. Capsule, Crypto Steel Capsule.
In alphabetical order, the ones, the top that got A's across the board are BitKey, BlockPlate, ColdBit Steel, Crypto Key Stack, Crypto Keys, Crypto Tag. Getting a theme here. Hodl Knox, Quadrat Register. Never heard of that one. Safe Seed, Seed Steel, and Simbit, and Steel Wallet.
I mean, this is kind of questionable now that I clicked in, and it's like the BitKey, which is on the top. It comes with the keys already engraved in it.
What the hell?
Only use their service with a BIP38 or BIP39 encrypted backup. So the key is in there, but you provide... The passphrase is your own passphrase. It's kind of questionable. Anyway, take it all with a grain of salt, the website. But, you know, not your keys, not your coins. I mean, I wouldn't use anything that came with a key already generated in it. So just keep that in mind. But this is it's a great way to see the different pros and cons of the different devices. Because at least he does say this in here, but I guess it's not part of his rating system for some reason.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, the other popular wallet out there right now that does produce your private key for you, Ballet Crypto, got F's across the board.
Yeah, fuck that shit.
Should not be shilling that shit.
No one should be. There's literally zero reason why anyone should ever use Ballet Crypto.
Hey. Bobby Lee's behind it, man.
Fuck you, Bobby. I see you.
Come on, man. Give Bobby a break.
I see you, Bobby.
Introducing a framework for privacy in e-commerce via Bitcoin is an article on Hacker Noon written by our good friend Josh Humphries, host of the Bottom Shelf Bitcoin podcast. And he just gave
basically did a great good job at this one.
Yeah, good shill for how merchants can get Bitcoin anonymously.
I mean, look, no, I mean, it's not even anonymously. He's not even saying that. He's saying, you know, we've seen so many content creators and business owners basically become victim of this cancel culture where they get removed from their payment processor and they just can't accept donations or payments. So like he does go into privacy a bit, which I appreciated. But that's not even the sell, right? The sell isn't even privacy. The sell is accepting payments in the first place, just even being able to get paid. And I think it's very much low-hanging fruit. So to see him... You know, it's a perfect use case to these people that literally they got kicked off of Patreon, they get kicked out of PayPal, they get kicked out of all these different centralized processors, maybe they get banned from Twitter. Bitcoin is there as an option, and he put this in Hacker Noon, which is like going to be right in their faces. I think it's a good read.
It's so fun. Yeah, shout out to Josh for writing that. But it's so funny watching all these people get the platform and be like, oh, I can't get money. And like being like, come on, dude, Bitcoin's right here. Like.
The funniest is when they're also no-coiners and they, like, hate Bitcoin.
Right.
So then you're like, you recommend it to them and then they just get pissed off at you.
Yeah.
Say, like, okay, dude, suit yourself.
Yeah. Meanwhile, we're running our BTC Pay server, just accepting censorship-resistant transactions every day. And that shout-out we gave that we did read arrived literally 30 minutes before you showed up.
Yeah, and you don't even know who sent it, which is crazy.
Yeah, some dude who has a friend named Adam.
Yeah, we know Adam.
Yeah.
Real, he's a true freak.
Yeah. Well, Adam could be made up.
They're both true freaks.
The freaks could be fucking with us, just creating people and storylines and these shout-outs. We have no idea. It's all psyop.
It's probably all Al. Al's just fucking with us.
Al, I know you're fucking listening, Al. You sick fuck. Stop texting my wife. She doesn't want to see that wizard's beard.
Talking about Patreon, we have Satreon.
Satreon, I'm going to go with.
Satreon.
It's Patreon.
Satreon.
For people who won't accept sats. Satreon.net.
Non-custodial.
What are your thoughts on that domain name?
That is, .net is, you know, shitty.
Yeah.
It's the shit coin of suffixes. I'd prefer .io. That's why, you know, we could have got tftc.net. Like, what is this, the 90s?
Yeah. Are you, yeah.
But the project's cool. It's non-custodial, lightning-powered, alternative to Patreon for that exact reason that we were talking about, where these people are getting deplatformed, and also because Patreon takes a fucking huge-ass fee.
Yeah. Yeah, all these...
Like, they're worse than the payment processors. What is it, like a 30% fee or something crazy? Like,
all this can be open source. BTC Pay server is basically like an open source
Imagine
Patreon.
You're bringing in 200, 300K. You're bringing in 300K a year, you know, for like... some content that you create, and you're paying Patreon 30% of that. It must be capped, right? Maybe I'm over exaggerating. There's no way.
I'm not sure. Patreon's
regardless, the fees are high. Hold me to the fire on what the fees are. I don't know.
And they've been known, more importantly, they've been known to withhold payouts from their creators as well,
and just cut you off.
Yeah,
and they're like the main way people are able to communicate to their communities and stuff, like. And they fucking just get right in the middle of there and just nickel and dime you.
That's why we put the effort in to make our own site and to help self-host our own content outside of third parties like MailChimp. Podcasting's more...
Or YouTube. We also didn't talk about YouTube last week.
Oh, we didn't. We did. We'll get to
that. The war on crypto. It fits in here perfectly.
Yeah. No, but just to stay on the topic of self-hosting, and YouTube will combat that. Or YouTube will show the opposite of this. Like... Pierre tweeted about this. Like, it's important to self-host your own content. That's why we have tftc.io. Like, I would not want to put all of our stuff on Medium. I'm not saying we're going to get censored, but just in case, prepare for the worst. And we used ghost.org, that CMS, and that CMS is good because they actually incentivize you to self-host. Yes, you can pay them to host for you. That's how they make money, actually. But it's open source CMS that you can host on your own servers.
But do we host with them?
We host with them right now, but we're going to move when we're in the black enough, we'll move to our own servers.
We're just a humble podcast.
Yeah, there's two of us.
Humble brand.
Running our own server.
It's 12%. It's Patreon is 5, 8, or 12%. I guess it scales down as you make more money is my guess.
Yeah.
But that's what the Wikipedia says.
Yeah, but still, they can...
It's less than 30. But
they can deplatform you.
Fucking massive. And they can raise your fees at any point and you're held hostage. You kind of have to do it.
Yeah.
But the reason I thought about was because, you know, that's like my response about YouTube is like, if you build everything on YouTube and you just expect, absolutely like tell YouTube to go fuck themselves, for censorship. But you have to take some personal responsibility there. Like, why are you so vulnerable that your whole business, you know, your whole livelihood is running through YouTube? Like, you're just asking for issues. They're a centralized company. They have not been great about being transparent about their censorship policies. This is to be expected. Like, I don't want to hear people outraged about TikTok banning your Bitcoin-focused account in 6 months. Like, fuck you. We see this coming. It's going to happen. Take control of your data. Take control of your future and, you know, protect yourself.
Yeah. No, and the tools exist to protect yourself today, but staying on YouTube too. People crying for like a decentralized alternative, that's a long shot away. Like, the data storage of these video sites is very intensive and capital intensive. John Seth has actually written a good blog post about this, I believe about a year and a half ago, that if you think you're going to build a decentralized video platform, like, you're... think again. Like, the amount of data storage that goes into this is ridiculous, and you're not gonna be able to like run that through a blockchain or anything. And then, so you're going to need centralized competitors to YouTube if you want to fix the YouTube censorship product problem. which I think needs to happen. They definitely have a monopoly. Who else is there? Like Vimeo.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to say that we're never going to have a distributed a distributed version. It's definitely a harder task than people think it is. That's
not
sure.
as easy as...
And a lot of this gets solved by just... Video particularly is heavy bandwidth, right? So it's way more easy to build a way easier to build a distributed Twitter clone or a distributed picture sharing, you know, photo sharing or something. But video is way bandwidth intensive, and especially when you start talking about privacy and stuff, like, you know, you're not going to be able to run those nodes through Tor or anything like that. So it becomes very difficult. A lot of this gets solved by just proper competition. Just, you know, like, and like Gab is an example of this before they kind of fell off. Like, they just decided that, I don't know, that whole porn thing, like, really freaked me out. But, like, Gab's a perfect example. Is like, they didn't do anything special. I guess now that they're on Mastodon, it's federated, federated servers to interact, so that it is more distributed. But the Gab in its original form was a straight-up Twitter clone that was completely centralized. It was just their ethos as a company, the rules that they held themselves to were more free speech oriented. So it provided a competitive outlet, right? So the ideal here is to see more competition come out, have more video platforms.
But they got deplatformed at the end of the day by their payment processors, by their DNS provider at the end of the day too.
Look, and I mean, like, you know, people can self-host their own videos if they want to self-host their own videos. But the easier way, the less costly way for most people is to host their videos on multiple platforms that are all centralized.
Yeah. So what would be, is BitChute attempting to do the decentralized?
I don't know. I haven't really been paying attention to any of these distributed video alternatives.
What about Block TV?
Block TV is not distributed at all. It's just a centralized blog that it competes like The Block and shit, but they primarily do video content, and they have their own fucking token, and there's like a bunch of Bitcoiners that keep going on that platform.
The siren calls,
we're looking
exposure.
At you, we know, you know, you're inadvertently supporting, you know, indirectly supporting their
shitcoinery.
Yeah, they're fucking, they launched an ICO. It's 2020. Well, they launched in 2019. It's 2019. They launched a fucking garbage ass ICO, man.
Hey, you gotta incentivize the content producers, bro.
It's,
I'm never gonna wake
shit
up.
Shit is trending to zero. It is trending to zero, and you will not see me on Block TV. It is not a coincidence that I have not been in any interviews with Block TV.
Yeah. Yeah. You're gonna have the Block TV stands like they never invited you.
Practice what you preach. Practice what you preach. You can't give. Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I was pumped that I sent a PSBT. Now I can officially say it right. And I've been talking about it a lot, saying it's cool. And I finally did it. It is cool. It is cool when you first send that.
It's fucking dope.
Yeah. Cold Card makes it easy. Cold Card and Wasabi made it easy. I used your demo.
Yeah, and hopefully Trezor should release it soon, too, because the Trezor T, no one should be using the Trezor 1. The Trezor T has an SD card slot, so.
Awesome. What do we got to riff on?
And the reason I don't like the Trezor 1, I've said it before, is because to use a Trezor securely, you absolutely need to use a passphrase. And with the Trezor 1, it doesn't have the touchscreen, so you can't enter the passphrase on the device. So to me, that's a disqualifier. And if you're storing any kind of meaningful amount of Bitcoin, you could pay the $75 or whatever it is to buy a Trezor T, guys.
Think about your security. Diversify. Are you excited for 2020?
Dude, I'm super excited for 2020. Why is the hindsight 2020 thing a thing? Because people have better vision than 2020. 2020 is like the average vision.
Yeah, 2020 is like perfect vision.
No, it's not perfect vision. Because my lady has better vision than 2020. She always makes the same stupid dad joke, you know?
I've had 2020.
She's like, your hindsight's worse than my regular sight. I've heard it so many times.
I've never heard that. I've had...
Yeah, you can have like 2015 vision and shit.
I had just assumed I haven't been to a optometrist.
Eye doctor.
An optometrist.
We don't need your fancy 5-point words. We can just
an eye doctor in a minute. I mean, I mean, knock on wood here. I've just assumed I've had 20/20 vision. I've never really had eye problems. Do you wear contacts?
No, I don't. I don't wear contacts. Yeah. My eyes are good. I'm gonna knock on wood. My eyes and my ears are good. You know, I won the genetic lottery. I'm very happy about it.
Yeah. Hairline not doing as good. I'm speaking of me. As my vision and sense of smell and hear, but you got to take what you can get.
Your sense of smell? That's one thing they don't test. No one's like, you have below average smell.
I think I have a good palate.
How would they do that test? I don't even know how they would do that test. We have one more thing on here. The difficulties with creating open verifiable hardware. Which is just a really good read or watch. It's it was part of 363, which was this conference that went on in Germany?
I forget exactly where it was, but it's a big hacker conference. A lot of Bitcoiners go to it.
It's the 36th year they've had it. There's a lot of really good talks. I mean, you should just go through all the talks. I haven't yet, but I have gone through this talk, and it was a very good talk. And basically, the idea is, you know, here we want open hardware as much as possible. We want to be able to verify that hardware as much as possible. And in the Bitcoin world, we see this a lot because we have these nodes and we have the hardware wallets, right? And there's all these different trade-offs where you're trying to make that happen. And compared to code, even though everyone can't read code, the fact that you can verify that code hasn't changed after someone else read it is a major bonus that you don't see with hardware. And like, you know, people try and get around that by stuff like with the cold card, having the transparent case, trying to keep the chips as simple as possible so you can look at the picture on the website and compare and contrast. But it will always be more difficult than open verifiable software. Because with open verifiable software, you can have the hash, you can sign it so that you know that someone looked at it and then it hasn't changed. The software hasn't changed. With hardware, that is much more difficult. And this guy, he's trying to make basically an open verifiable hardware platform that has a built-in screen and keyboard, like a nice little computer that's like a trusted piece of hardware. And he goes through the difficulties he's had working through those trade-offs.
Yeah, it's crazy the amount of trade-offs he has to take into consideration, specifically with hardware, but software too as well. Like, there's software is always buggy. It's always leaky. These are ongoing projects. That's actually what I said in the Ben today. The reason we need these booster rockets is because we need them during the beta phase. If you freeze it, no, Bitcoin is still technically in the beta phase. It's version 0.19.0.1. That first zero dictates that we're still in beta. So it is an ongoing project. Software and then the hardware that it runs on is something that we're still figuring out as humans. If we're thinking long term here, we're really lowering our time preference and thinking into the future. We are in the very, very first half of the first inning of this digital revolution, and we're still trying to figure out how to interact with this stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a slow and steady process. I mean, this is also why multisig is so important, right? Because you can have hardware wallets that are close to being open and verifiable, like as close as you can get. And then you mix and match them so that multiple of them need to be compromised to get your keys. Like, that's a major step up improvement there. And I really hope 2020, it really seems like 2020 is gearing up to be like, it's going to be like the year of good user-friendly multisig that you can use with your own full node, completely sovereign, right?
Yeah, yeah. No, and I think
that would be great to see. That's a huge wish list item. It seems like the projects are there. They're working. They're being iterated on. They're being fleshed out. It seems like we're close. It seems like we're close. I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, and we won't make any decade long predictions. We'll just be here week in, week out to keep you guys up.
Well, I think in the decade, the number will go up.
Yeah, the numbers will go up. Hash rate.
All the numbers are going to go up.
Yeah. Yeah, but we'll be here. Rabbit Hole Recap will be here to keep you up to date on what's going on, what we think about what's going on, what we think's important to focus on, and what's going on. It was the first trip of 2020, year of clarity.
The year of clarity is going to age so poorly. There's going to be more confusion than ever this year. It's going to be opposite of year of clarity.
Is this Matt's no exchange will ever use Lightning Network prediction from last year.
Dude, I'd be so happy. That was like, that's the best prediction to ever get wrong, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that's fantastic.
And this would be a good one to get wrong, too.
That's why it's funny when I was like, I think someone gave me shit when I like had a post where I was like, I'm bullish on Lightning being like, because it got added to Bitfinex. I was like, this is fucking huge, you know? And someone was like, you just like parrot, you know, the usual talking points, yada, yada, yada. It was like, 10 months ago, I said this was never going to happen. So you go fuck yourself. Right. Like, I was pretty confident. I said never. I was like, I spoke in absolutes. That's what happens when Seven Drink Mad comes out. You know, you try not to speak in absolutes.
Yes, yes. We can all work trying to get better in that aspect of life. Yeah.
I think, like, you know, a good way to end this episode is, like, New Year's resolutions. I mean, I think, like, if you're a Bitcoiner and you listen to this podcast, you don't have a full node or you don't use a full node, like, maybe the plan should be you, like, make yourself a Mynode. I think Mynode seems like it seems like the user-friendly, it's like a good user-friendly mix of if you're building it yourself, but you're using these install scripts, and they have all these different tools. Like, you can install your own blockchain explorer. You can install mempool.space, a local copy of that, so you can see what the mempool is for your fees. You can install Whirlpool. Soon you can install Dojo. You can do Lightning. You can do Electrum. All 24/7. These dedicated devices, like, as awesome as it is, like, there's no shame in just running Bitcoin Core on your computer. It's very easy to run, and then you're running a full node. But when it comes time to interact with hardware wallets, when it comes time to use it for mixing, when it comes time to use it for Lightning, it's just easier to have a 24/7 dedicated device. So I think, like, controlling your own keys, if you're not doing that yet, consider buying a cold card. Try out CoinJoin if you haven't tried it yet. If you have tried it, consider ramping up your efforts. It takes a long time. You know, timing analysis is one of the big things. You can't move large funds through these things, especially with liquidity low. And as more people use it, liquidity increase. So consider that. And play around with Lightning. Let's play around with Lightning. Use Tor when you play around with Lightning. Otherwise, you're broadcasting your IP address with the attached UTXOs. Don't do that. And always CoinJoin before you open channels. Don't open channels with tainted Bitcoins. CoinJoin them first, so that they don't have a discernible history. Or they will still if you fuck it up, but at least they'll have less of a discernible history.
Yes.
It's important not to make privacy guarantees that we cannot keep.
Yes, yes. Just be aware. Be more aware. And don't be afraid to interact with this stuff. Again, like I was saying, it was so fun creating a partially signed Bitcoin transaction and sending it on the mainnet over the weekend.
That's a bit, like, I fucking love when I have some downtime and I'm just like, I'm doing Bitcoin today.
That's what I did yesterday. You know?
I'm just doing Bitcoin. I'm going to, like, get my ducks in order. Maybe I'll fuck around with something new.
I did.
I'll play around with it. Like, that shit's fun. It's enjoyable.
I did 4 hours of Bitcoin yesterday.
And you learn more than, you could watch millions of videos, read a bunch of shit. Like, you learn so much more, like, just fucking diving in and just doing it yourself.
Yeah.
And just trying it out. Just, you know, do that, you know?
So in the year of clarity, try and bring clarity to your Bitcoin process by practicing.
And our DMs are open, you know. Feel free to reach out. Always happy to help. We have the Keybase chat. BitcoinKeybase.com is the easy link to join that, which is, of course, I have a vanity domain for it. But BitcoinKeybase.com, we have that group chat. So just keep exploring, keep learning, keep educating yourself. Don't get cocky. We still, you know, we all have way more to learn. And just keep trying to improve yourself.
Yeah. Let's end on all that. Peace and love, freaks.
Stay humble, stack sats.
You got that one in. You really got that one in.